Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tom Khalil. I'm the Deputy Director for Technology and Innovation with the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, and I'm joined by two of the rock stars of science, Arthi Prabhakar, who's the Director of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and Dr. Frances Collins, who's Director of the National Institutes of Health. And we're here this afternoon to take your questions on Twitter about an exciting announcement that the President made this morning to launch a $100 million BRAIN initiative, which stands for Brain Research Through Advancing Innovative Neurotechnologies. And this initiative is really designed to improve our understanding of how the brain works, to improve our ability to diagnose, treat, cure, and ultimately prevent diseases of the brain, and to help create the industries and jobs of the future. So if you think about what we could learn about designing future information and communications technologies by understanding how the human brain works. So here to tell us a little bit about what their agency will be doing to advance the President's BRAIN initiative is Arthi Prabhakar, Director of DARPA.
It's great to be here with both of you today. DARPA is participating in this initiative out of a view that what is happening today in the biological sciences and the new research in brain technology, brain understanding, is really opening a window that we think is going to lead to some amazing and powerful capabilities ahead. Some of the work that we've been doing already has started to show us how we can have direct brain control of very sophisticated prosthetics. We're looking at what's possible in terms of understanding how memory is encoded in the brain and how we can start to imagine how we might repair and restore memory loss. As you can imagine, both of those are examples of challenges that our wounded warriors face and very much an issue that's of concern to us as part of the Defense Department. We also think that as we learn more about how the brain functions, there are going to be opportunities ahead perhaps to inspire new information processing architectures or new computing approaches. There are going to be new opportunities to understand how all of us learn and assess and gather new information. And these first few steps that we're going to be taking, I think, are going to lead to some amazing capabilities. So we're really pleased to be able to team with NIH and with the National Science Foundation as well. And we think that by pulling together, we're going to be able to take bigger steps working with the broad scientific and technical community.
Well, I'm also very glad to be part of this exciting initiative. And Arthi and Tom, it's nice to sit here with you and to hear from our folks out there who may want to send questions through Twitter. NIH is the largest supporter of biomedical research in the world, and our focus in neuroscience has been very substantial over the years. We're now spending like $5.5 billion in neuroscience research even before this initiative gets started. But this initiative is an idea whose time has come. We have learned over the course of years how to record from individual neurons and to see what happens when they are being activated and to learn a bit about how they're connected. And we know there's about 100 billion of them in the human brain and that each one of those makes thousands of connections. But we haven't been able to really understand what's going on in real time in the circuits in the brain that control important things like the visual system, like memories, like even consciousness. And we would love to be able to take advantage of new technologies that are just now being invented at a rather interesting pace and apply those to really learn the language of the brain, to learn how these things happen at the speed of thought, and then to utilize that to build a new foundation upon which we can build new insights into Alzheimer's disease, into epilepsy, Parkinson's disease, autism, schizophrenia, traumatic brain injury, PTSD. All of these conditions that we know have their basic difficulties residing in the brain, but where our tools for understanding them have been limited. Here is the chance to pull together the best and brightest experts from all over this country, and we will have international connections here as well. Join up with foundations, join with our partners at DARPA and NSF, and really tackle a problem which you could say is the greatest scientific frontier that we could think of, the human brain. And today, the President announces we're getting started.
Great. So, Frances, first question is for you, and this is from Faster Cures. How can patient communities be involved, and what patient-related outcomes can they expect?
Great question. And Faster Cures is a wonderful organization that has really done a lot to bring this to attention. Well, clearly, I just mentioned a list of diseases which we believe ultimately will benefit from this enterprise. I want to be clear that that isn't going to happen overnight as we try to build an understanding of the emergent properties of the brain and how these circuits work. We are gradually going to get those insights that lead to advances in human disease. It'll be very important, though, to have patient advocates as our partners all the way along, and for us to understand in a two-way conversation how this enterprise is meeting those goals. And we will need the support of patient advocates for this kind of enterprise, recognizing that it is not going to be an overnight sensation, but something that will require a commitment over the course of quite a few years. Just as with the Genome Project back 20 years ago, where that kind of support from patient advocates was critical to get an enterprise underway that many people were skeptical about, which ultimately has transformed a lot of what we do in medicine today.
Great. And Arthi, the next question is for you. Can you please address the concern that there'll be a brain drain of funds away from other research areas? And this is from Michael Thomason.
Within DARPA, this is an initiative that we're excited about, but it's really one of a very broad set of activities across a diverse portfolio of interests. And that ranges from a number of things that we do that are much more military unique, but across the technology spectrum, other areas of biologically inspired research, including looking at new approaches to diagnose and then treat infectious disease, work that we are doing on the big data front, which actually may have some very interesting applications in this enterprise as well, but more broadly where we're trying to develop the tools and the capabilities that will allow many different application areas to use new insights to get real insight and knowledge and meaning out of vast heterogeneous data sets. Other work that we're doing to advance the frontiers of material science and to come up with new pathways to come up with materials with novel properties that we haven't even been able to imagine yet today. So in the broader DARPA context, this is one of a larger number of exciting initiatives. And in each of those areas, the way we get our work done, of course, is by working with a broad technical community. It's always very much something in our minds to make sure that we see that we continue to have this robust science and technology enterprise across the country, not just in this area, but in many others as well.
Great. Francis, this next question is for you, and this is from Puneet Kolapara, and he asks, where will the money from the Brain Initiative come from? Lots of scientists worry it will take money from existing neuroresearch, so I'm wondering if you could talk about the neuroscience blueprint and that type of thing.
Sure. So NIH in FY14, what the president was talking about this morning, is going to come up with $40 million in that budget to support this brain initiative. That will come in part from dollars that are put together every year by a group of institute directors who are part of the neuroscience blueprint. So this brings together those institutes that are working on neuroscience directly, on mental health, on drug abuse, on eye diseases, all of these, of course, connected to the brain. And they have sort of a rolling investment fund that they try to figure out where to put those resources. And this is, in their view, the perfect kind of initiative to make those investments. So between that and some other institute contributions and a little bit from my own discretionary fund, we believe there's $40 million that can go into this enterprise to get it started, and then joining with DARPA and their $50 million and NSF and another $20 million coming from there, and foundations that are ready to actually join in a big way, some of whom have been in this space already for quite a while, like the Allen Institute for Brain Science, the Kavli Foundation, the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, the Salk Institute. We could say this is going to be quite a strong start out of the gate with a project that's just now being announced.
So we had a question from Michael S. Carroll, who has a blog called Nuke Ambiguous, and he had a question for Francis about the high-level working group that you're going to be putting together.
Well, we felt this was the perfect moment to convene a dream team of the most visionary neuroscientists across the board, from simple systems to complicated ones, from technology developers to people who are more interested in things like brain function at a higher level, and put them into a very clearly charged circumstance of telling us exactly what the right steps should be, what the milestones should be, what the deliverables and the timetables for this project to be successful. How much should be focused initially on technology development, for instance, to allow us to record from hundreds of thousands of neurons at one time? How much should be focused on simpler systems where we might be able to figure out the very basic language of how circuits operate versus looking at much more complicated systems like the human? All of that is the charge to this group, which is going to be co-led by Corey Bargman from Rockefeller University and Bill Newsom from Stanford. And they're going to guide us. And a lot of what NIH does going forward will be very much dependent upon what this group comes up with. They're going to give us initial feedback this summer about what they think we should start on in fiscal year 14. But then we're going to ask them by the summer of 2014 to lay out a much more detailed schedule of what exactly the milestones ought to be so that we have a firm foundation for this project where we all know what we're trying to do. We're asking them to make their goals bold, maybe even audacious, but not crazy, achievable. And we're pretty confident we have the right group to make that happen.
Great. So I've got a question for you, Arthi, from Brad Thielman. And the question is, how much will the initial initiative focus on the theoretical foundations of brain function in addition to mapping the brain?
Oh, that's a great question, because I think brain function is, for the DARPA work, really is the starting point about thinking about this initiative. That's the line of inquiry that we're really taking is, I think we have some understanding at the neuron scale. We're able to measure what's happening. Of course, traditional neuroscience, I'm told by our neurologists, is, you know, we've learned our neuroscience stroke by stroke, so we have this sort of macro picture of how the brain works. But really the interesting question, I think, lies in that mid-range, and that's going to be the most fruitful area, we believe, from the work that we're doing so far. And so, in fact, studying brain function and being able to build a theoretical model as we go, something that we will, of course, be refining as we learn more and more. I think that's that interplay between a model that we can test and then more data coming in as we develop new tools and sensing, that's really going to be a very, very fertile direction for this research area. So I think that's exactly where I would expect to see the good results coming from.
Great. Francis, this one is for you, and it's from Adam Steele, a.k.a. Mr. Steely Dan, and he wants to know how are the findings of the Brain Initiative going to be made publicly available? So maybe you could talk about NIH's leadership in public access and also some of the things that NIH has been doing to make data more broadly available.
That's a great question. So we firmly believe, and this is strongly supported across the government in terms of the science agencies, in making data accessible immediately to all those who might be able to utilize this to make new insights into biology and medicine. In a certain way, this got a big leap forward with the Genome Project, which I had the privilege of leading and which decided back almost 20 years ago that all the data produced by that project would be immediately placed on the internet without any barrier to access or any attempt to file for intellectual property for things that seemed like they really were basic science and they should be in the common public domain. The Brain Project will follow those same principles of immediate data access, because while there may be a core group of individuals who are working on this effort, the neuroscience community writ large is going to be very interested and very powerful in being able to build on what the core group produces. So we will make every effort to immediately test any new data that's produced to be sure that the quality is good. We don't want to put stuff out there that's going to mislead people. But as soon as it looks as if there's a data set that is well quality controlled, it's going to be available. And again, NIH feels very strongly that this kind of public access to data is a critical part of why the taxpayers pay us to do what we do. And it's an empowering kind of procedure for science in general. And I might say it applies not just to scientists, but to the general public. We very strongly are pushing the idea that any publications that comes out of biomedical research should be accessible to anybody who's interested in that information without necessarily having barriers of cost get in the way. And right now, anything that we support is available for free within 12 months, and there's certainly conversations about shortening that time, which we're very interested in seeing come to pass.
Great. Another question for you, Francis, which is from Bam D. Woodchipper, and he wants to know why we should make this investment now, given that the NIH pay lines are so low.
Well, that's a very serious question, and of course, we are deeply concerned at the present time. The support for biomedical research is in a pretty difficult pickle. Over the course of the last 10 years, the NIH budget has actually lost about 20% of its purchasing power, with flat budgets and inflation eroding our ability to conduct research. And of course, the sequesters, which have just happened, have further caused a hit to that resource support, with $1.5 billion being removed from NIH's budget for the current fiscal year. So one might well ask, is this the wrong time to be starting something new and innovative? But if you could see, as I think we all do, the opportunity here for actually the next big advance in neuroscience that's going to have implications for patients and their families who are waiting for new breakthroughs to occur for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or autism. And you could see the technology has just about now arrived at the point where this could happen. It would be very hard to say, well, we're going to hunker down for a while and wait until the budget gets better. Be clear now, the initiative that we're talking about, the BRAIN initiative here, $100 million, that is still only in the neighborhood of 0.3% of the NIH budget. So this is not going to have a huge impact on the rest of what we do. And of course, the people who are supported through the BRAIN initiative will be those wonderful, bright neuroscientists who might otherwise be seeking support through some other means from NIH. So it's not as if we're taking this money and putting it somewhere else that is completely disconnected to the overall enterprise. Frankly, I wish we could go faster. If the budget circumstance gets better and if this project looks as promising as I think it will, maybe we'll be able to ramp it up and still be able to be in a circumstance where we can see everything else flourish as well. But right now, it just seems like it would be the wrong time to decide we're going to put this on hold when the promise is as great as it is.
Great. And Arthi, this question for you, and this is from Gabrielle Rabinowitz, and she wants to know, how will the labs that are going to be part of this initiative be selected for funding?
Yes, I think the way our programs work, and I'm very very similar in some ways to what NIH and NSF do as well, we want to make sure that we are able to have an open opportunity for every researcher in the country that has a great idea. And so our work is done through competitive processes, and once a program is defined, we typically go out with a broad announcement and actively work to make sure that everyone knows about it, because we want to get proposals from the best possible places. And that means, for us, it means, of course, the research community that already knows about DARPA, but we also really make an effort to reach out to people that don't already know about us or know about our work. And then through a competitive selection process, we end up making awards. Across DARPA, our work gets done in universities and companies of all sizes, as well as government and other kinds of laboratories. This particular work is somewhat more research-oriented, so I would expect to continue to see a greater preponderance of laboratory and university funding, but again, a very broad swath of participants.
And I'm actually going to take this next question.
Go for it, Tim.
This question is from William Pomerantz, and he wants to know whether there are any X Prize style incentive prizes as part of the BRAIN initiative. This is a real area of interest for the Office of Science and Technology Policy, and we were able to work with Congress to get legislation passed that gives all agencies the authority to support incentive prizes of up to $50 million. DARPA has been a great user of prize authority and used it, for example, for the development of a self-driving car, which is now attracting a huge amount of private sector interest. So we don't have any immediate plans for an incentive prize in this area, but we would love ideas about the appropriate use of incentive prizes. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in the area of using incentive prizes for big data-related challenges when you make a lot of data available to the public and encourage global communities of data scientists to extract more value. So great question, an issue that we'll be continuing to take a look at.
Can I chime in on that?
Sure.
The next chapter of the robotics challenges is underway right now at DARPA, and this year's DARPA robotics challenge is about robots that can help in a humanitarian aid or disaster relief scenario. So specifically robots that know how to operate in a human-designed environment. So can they climb stairs? Can they turn knobs? And we're seeing some amazing innovation come out of that particular challenge. I think it'd be very interesting, whoever tweeted about that, I'd be very interested to hear what ideas are out there for challenges related to the brain work.
Great. And here is a question, which is, how can private companies, universities, and philanthropists help support your efforts? And this is from Hebrew Home.
Well, already several private foundations have stepped forward to say they want to be significant players, and we're delighted by that. I mentioned Kavli, the Allen Institute, the Howard Hughes Institute, the Salk Institute, and there are others that have made some initial inquiries that leads me to believe that's not going to be the whole list. And likewise, industries. There are a lot of industry interest out there from organizations that are very much into these kinds of complex circuit modeling, and some who are also thinking that this might be the next way to design a new generation of computers. If we understood how the human brain does what it does, it might teach us some very exciting things about future design. So the door is wide open to all of those inquiries, especially right now. As we begin to pull this project together and figure out who's got the ball with which parts, I'm hoping we'll have lots of players. Again, it will be very important that we have good communication and that we're all on the same place as far as data access, so that the information that comes out of this network of players benefits everybody who's got a good idea and wants to follow it up to the next step.
Great. Here's a question that both of you might address, which is, given how little understanding we currently have, will we start with simple organisms to map their brains first?
So from NIH's perspective, there'll certainly be an important role there because we may be able to learn some important principles about how these circuits operate by working with systems that are not quite as complicated as the 100 billion neurons of the brain. And would expect that some of those principles will actually apply to more complicated systems as well. So it will be a mix of trying to learn what we can from simpler systems, but not being shy to try to tackle more complicated ones. There will be the issue also of invasiveness versus non-invasiveness. If you're trying to understand the normal function of a normal human brain, you probably don't want to do things that are going to put that person at risk. So some of the more invasive efforts will have to be done with simpler organisms where that is acceptable, although we will follow every kind of ethical constraint on that. DARPA has been very much interested in the human applications, particularly with wounded warriors. I don't know if you want to say something about that, Arthur.
Yeah, that's been very much our focus, and with the focus on brain function research and this sort of mid-level understanding of what's happening in the brain, the natural path for our projects has been to start with animal models and then, you know, after extensive research there, moving forward with human activities. It's been a very very productive path.
Mm-hmm. Chris Bulin wants to know whether you think this will be our generation's space race.
Well, maybe it'll be our generation's space shot or moonshot. The race part of it worries me a little bit. There's an implication here that this is going to somehow end up being a big competition between countries or whatever. I think the science that we're talking about here is really fundamental, pre-competitive, foundational kind of work. We look forward to the opportunity to build this enterprise with international colleagues and do it all together, as we are doing now with genomics, for instance, where there is an international flavor to cancer genomics, to the microbiome, to all of these other projects which spun out of the technology advances in DNA sequencing. This ought to have that same potential. And goodness, the results of this project, if it's successful, should touch all of the 7 billion lives on the planet. So we really ought to work on it together to try to get a good outcome for everybody.
That's really great. And, you know, the thing I would add is I grew up in a generation during the space race where space was inspirational to us as kids, and it was something that fired our imaginations and got our pulses racing. I think this project certainly has that kind of potential because I know, you know, when you talk to kids and you start imagining with them what we might learn about how the human brain works and how we then understand ourselves from that, I think it is going to have that kind of potential to capture their imaginations.
Right. One of the things that the president talked about in his remarks this morning was the idea of grand challenges, of identifying these ambitious but achievable goals that have the potential to capture the public imagination. So whether it's putting a man on the moon or sequencing the human genome or transforming our understanding of how the human brain works, these are the types of really big, ambitious goals that do get people excited. And one of the other things that the president said is that he really wants to see this become an all-hands-on-deck effort, so mm-hmm. that this is not just about the government, but already you see companies like IBM driving advances in AI by beating Gary Kasparov at chess and Ken Jennings at Jeopardy, or Qualcomm supporting a large incentive prize for a tricorder, some small mobile device that could diagnose 10 diseases, or Elon Musk saying, I want to die on Mars, but not on impact. These are the types of ambitious goals that I think really would have the potential to get people excited about science, technology, and innovation that I think can become positive self-fulfilling prophecies. Mm. So we have 7 new tweets. So one question was about the funding for the ethical issues associated with the ethical, legal, and societal implications. As the president mentioned, he's going to be asking his bioethics commission to look at this. But I know that's something that both of you have thought about. DARPA is always dealing with really radical new technologies that raise ethical issues. And obviously, when you were directing the Human Genome Project, this is something NHGRI took very seriously as well. So I'm wondering if you can both comment on that.
Well, I totally appreciate the importance of this. And believe me, I think there are going to be a lot of interesting and important questions to address. And I think it's great the president has charged Amy Guttman and the Bioethics Commission to begin that process. And it will require some research, no doubt. The Genome Project, perhaps, maybe for first time, decided that this was such a major part of what was being proposed, that this would be done in a forward-looking way with a substantial budgetary contribution to the effort. And we can learn a lot from that experience of trying to be proactive, not waiting for the crisis, but trying to imagine what the most important questions are for society and how we can prepare ourselves to be sure we're going down the right path. And I think that's the same kind of model we can follow here.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's one of a few areas where we have tried as a society to start asking the questions before the technologies really roll out, and I think we really need to do that here. I always like to distinguish between the two pieces. One is the ethical manner in which we do the research that we directly sponsor, and I think that's very important for us to continue to do, but it's also quite clear because there are clear laws and regulations that govern that. The much more interesting questions really come as we start imagining where this could go. And there, of course, we don't know what the answers are going to be, but we as a society are going to need to grapple with that, not just the scientific and technical community, but a broader group. And so I think it's terrific to have the President's Commission on Bioethics engaged, and that'll be very helpful to all of us as we go forward.
We also have another question about how do we move ideas more rapidly from basic research to application. And another project that you two are working on together aims to do just that in the area of drug discovery and development. So I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about that.
I'm happy to, and it has been great working with DARPA in this space of translation. How do you take a basic science discovery and apply all of the bright capabilities that DARPA has in terms of engineering real savvy, smart ideas, and how you could meld that together with biology that NIH knows about. In this case, it's a project to try to develop a biochip that allows you to determine whether a particular promising drug candidate is going to be safe or not in humans without having to use animals, but giving you a data point that's actually more reliable because the biochip is loaded up with human cells. And we're having a really good time working with DARPA on that as a collaboration. And I hope the BRAIN Initiative will present many others like this.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, our two agencies have different missions, different ways of working, but these are places where we are extremely complementary, and I think it's a promising sign of more good things to come.
Indeed.
Great. Well, I'm sorry we weren't able to answer everyone's question. We've got a bunch more fantastic questions, but we encourage people to stay tuned to whitehouse.gov, and we'll continue to look for other ways to engage the public in this important initiative. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks.